Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
And welcome to the Survivor Stock Watch Podcast for episode 6, I think. Is it 6 or is it 7?
I wrote down 8.
Or is it 8?
I think it's eight episodes in? I think it's the 6th or 7th episode, but 8th. Ooh, don't quote me.
I'm looking it up as we speak because it'd be very embarrassing if this was episode 8 and I said it was six.
I think it is 8. You better be wearing a seatbelt. I'm just not sure what they lump together. I think it's episode 8.
Yeah, it's episode 8. Look at that. I'm in the past here.
Yep.
See what happened is that last episode, episode 7, I smashed the hourglass,
right, so
I'm actually back in episode 6. But we are here to talk about episode 8 of Survivor. It's 8 episodes in.
Let's go back to episode six. Let's talk about Daniel and everything. That'll be fine.
We're gonna rate these players from 1 to 10 based on how well we think they're doing in the game, and we're gonna play some sound bites and talk about some of the highlights of the episode. So let's get right into it here. With me, of course, is Mary. How you doing, Mary?
Doing great. My ratings, like my memory, are flexible, and so they may change in the moment depending on how the discussion goes. I feel like it always takes discussion to wrap my mind around what happened in an episode of Survivor. You know, it's like I got the little picture stuff, but I got to think big picture. How's this affecting everyone? And of course, in new era of Survivor, everything moves much, much more quickly. So people who were on the up today might be on the bottom tomorrow. We'll see.
Yeah.
Not only will I be surprised, I'll also be a little disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Well, Jeff, but like the more things change with Survivor, the more they stay the same. And that was very evident in this episode. I mean, we had people dropping out of challenges and because they didn't like the food. What is this? Survivor 41?
Yeah. Drea gets another advantage because she doesn't like BB and J.
Yeah, I don't like peanut butter and jelly.
And unlike Xander, I think that legitimately was her initial reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, I think that was Xander's reasoning too. He was, you know, he was paleo.
Yeah, but I feel like he also wanted to try and gain some yes. goodwill and hang with the losers.
Yeah,
that's what he said. So, you know, hey, it's fine. I don't know if Drea was thinking about needing to hang with the losers.
I agree. I think that Drea genuinely was just like, I don't care for PB&J. Really, like the reward for this challenge is the punishment from the early season of Big Brother. Like, that's what we're doing here.
Okay. To be fair, I don't like PB&J. Like, I'll have some PB.
Mm.
No J. I'll have PB or J.
Or J, but not together.
Not together. And if I'm having J, I need toast.
What's your issue with J and PB being together?
I feel like people are always like, oh, it's like you're the peanut butter to my jelly. No, I don't want two gross, contradictory things that should not go together. They're two completely different flavor profiles and textures. I don't like the texture of jelly anyway. And so I got to have it spread real thin.
That's why you get some PB in there for the PB texture.
I'll have BJ. Wait, Do not think about it. I will have some butter and jelly.
You're lucky I'm not set up to get sound clips from the podcast.
Dang it. Taryn, let's move along. Oh, I didn't even finish what I was going to say, which was I don't like peanut butter and jelly. But when you go on a hike or something, like like so a peanut butter and jelly sandwich when you're really hungry will taste great. There are too many picky eaters on Survivor. That's what I've decided. And I'm not talking about like allergies or, you know, being vegetarian or something. I'm talking about people who are just like, what is this? Babysitting a 10-year-old? And then they won't eat the crust on their pizza either?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's when Jonathan is out there saying we're getting like 400 calories a day. I'm taking any calorie I can at that point. I don't care if it's J, B, or P.
Yep. Any of those. Any of those.
We started the episode, and this is what kind of for me sort of tipped that we might be losing Chanel in the episode. Chanel says a classic Big Brother quote.
I think tonight is the first night I realized that I in my head was playing chess while everyone else was playing checkers.
Did she get that right?
I mean, if she's playing chess and everyone else is playing checkers, it's still the wrong game.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the phrase, though.
So I think the question is, did she mean this in the way that she said it? Meaning she's been playing chess. She's been playing too hard, too complicated. Everyone else is playing checkers. Very simple. She needs to get on their level. And then her path through the episode is that she felt like, okay, I'm going to get on their level, play checkers. And then by the end of the episode, she was like, I guess I should have been playing harder because they were playing so hard. Or did she just say this in the wrong way?
I'm going to lean to her saying it in the wrong way, mostly because she's made it a point also to mention, she mentions it in this episode, but she also did in a previous one about how a lot of her gameplay is to like kind of, you know, be cool, calm, collected and like hang back, be a little quiet and stuff. And that seems a little more checkers than chess to me.
Yeah. Well, either way, it's not going to be great here for Chanel. Couple of other highlights here. We got the return of the Xander advantage that he never got, except it's a different advantage this time.
The old sit out bench advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This should be like a relief to everyone, right? Like, oh, we're finally going to be able to see this advantage be found and learn what it is, except it's different than it was last time. So what was it last time?
Probably another hourglass.
Just a whole hourglass under the bench.
Whole hourglass and a mallet down there.
Yeah.
That'd be dangerous. Don't do that by water or on probably the sand. Nothing.
Probably doesn't matter.
Let's not smash on the sand. I'm glad that we got this. What is it called? Knowledge with power? No.
Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. I'm glad we saw it again because it's been a fun experiment to watch how people do the same things differently. But
it's still way overpowered. I mean,
it's way overpowered in this season, especially.
Mm-hmm.
And especially being given to Drea, owner of one of the current idols. So
owner of all of the advantages.
This is, you know, people have talked about their bags of tricks and, you know, there are a lot of jokes about Val and her 500 idols. Drea has Val's 500 idols. She has everything. And if I'm Drea, I feel like you got to start playing those soon. But also, once you start playing them, you kind of can't stop playing them. Mm. You know what I mean? But wouldn't it be great to play one of the things and then people are like, oh, Drea had a thing. Maybe Drea's a threat. Got to vote Drea out. Then Drea plays another thing. It's like, oh, okay. Drea played two things. Drea's got to be out of things. How many things could you have? Drea plays a third thing. Okay, this is getting out of control. Drea's got all the things. Fourth thing. At that point, we got to be at like fire making, right?
I guess so. It reminds me, I don't remember who told this story, but I remember hearing, not a story necessarily, but like the concept of like putting a guy that's bigger than you, like a Jonathan, in a headlock, It's like, great, you managed to put a guy that's bigger than you in a headlock. Now what? You can't let him out of the headlock, because as soon as you do, he's going to turn around and beat the crap out of you.
Right. So it's like I only see two scenarios. Either Drea plays all the things in quick succession or none of them.
I mean,
what are the odds that Drea is going to play one thing? And it's like, you know, when you have one idol, because we've seen people play an idol and then find that idol again and then play it and then find it again and play it and find it again, etc. And when you play that way, it's like, okay, you got to keep finding the idol because that's the only reason you're staying at this point. But with Drea, she's already got all the stuff. So maybe knowledge is power in that Drea knows where all the stuff is. I mean, she knows where all the idols are. She knows where all the amulets are. She probably knows where several of the bonus votes are.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like you would get in your head about not wanting to play them too early. And I'm not saying that it's a good strategic idea to play them early. I just want to see it so that we don't have to like 12 things stacked up.
I like it. I mean, I feel like hoard them all you want. I think the knowing where they are is huge by itself, as you mentioned, and having them if you need them is always a good thing, especially since she told people about her extra vote, but not that many people know about the amulet. Obviously, people know about the idol, but now they don't know about knowledge is power. So, you know, keeping that tight is good. And this is how Drea plays the game. She says to us,
but if you know me by now, I'm not going to be aware of the advantage. I'm going to take the advantage to see what it is.
Which I think is the right call, because I went on a whole journey with this beware advantage where I was like, oh, it's a beware advantage. Okay. And then she takes it out. She reads it. It says, okay, here's why it's beware, because you need to go and find it under a coconut near the well. And if you get caught, then you'll be caught red-handed. Uh-oh, beware. I was like, that's the beware, really? That she might get caught finding an idol? That's nothing compared to losing your vote for the pre-merge. Come on. Then she goes, finds the coconut, and literally gets red hands. I was like, okay. All right, that was clever. That was, okay, you got me. She should have bewared.
I think it would be slightly better if it wasn't right by the water well, where there's easy access to at least get most of it off. Like, is there another option here, which is like, reach your hand in, get red paint all over you, and just put the red paint all over you, and not in a like, hi, I'm covered in blood way, but like, play it off as something else.
Like what?
Well, okay, so I think now, this is me having thought about it for a couple hours here, but like, if they had red paint at the camp, instead of coming back and waiting to get called out on it, and most likely she just didn't realize that she had paint on the back of her arm, take the paint with you. Like, go out, find the coconut, find the little jar of paint that you got to stick your hand in, and then be like, okay, I need to go get some red paint as a cover up. And then take the paint so that at least you painted something.
Here's my thought. First of all, just go straight into the water and wash it off as thoroughly as possible. If for some reason you can't do that, which she didn't do, then take your buff or something, put it around your arm to hide it until you can wash it off or it goes away. That's kind of just a natural place to have a buff anyway, right? Like over your hand. If for some reason people are like, why do you have the thing there? Like, oh, I like slammed my arm. Like I was carrying some wood and I might've cut myself. I'm not sure. It just kind of hurts. So I just put this here to protect it from whatever. Right. Like nobody's going to be like, oh, it's red, isn't it? You've found something that put your hand, that made your hand, like nobody's going to go to there. Right.
If she had a little bit more red paint on her when Tori found her, I think we were pretty close to Tori actually having a confessional saying, I caught her red-handed. That would have been perfect. Like, I think that's what they wanted.
It should have been what happened. We did. So I was very amused, curious, disturbed by the sounds.
Those were three different things.
They were three different things. Well, when you hear this, you'll understand. This is what we heard when she found the coconut full of paint.
And I'm like, what's in this hole? Oh my God.
What's in this hole?
Ew, don't make that sound. Oh, I don't like that. I can't tell if this is like, is this Foley?
It has to be.
Like, there's no way.
Real.
I had a computer, a CD-ROM game, might have even been a floppy disk game when I was young, and it was a Mr. Potato Head game, and there was a part where you could paint, and when you would take the little paint bucket icon and throw it on the little coloring book, it would go it would make that sound. And that's what it sounds like.
And I'm like, what's in this hole?
Exactly, that's how.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's so bad. It's like, did you ever do that thing where you have a blindfold on and then you put your hand in like a bowl of cold cooked spaghetti and then you make that noise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Just a couple of other things. Last episode, I noted that that Jonathan, during the fake competition, got the Survivor theme played while he was beasting the boulder.
Jonathan, watch out behind you! Jonathan is up! An amazing move by Jonathan!
Because they love Jonathan in competitions. This episode, he got a guitar riff.
That fast! Feel it! That fast! Feel it!
When he caught up to Omer's hoop skills.
That was like the Rockstars Alliance like sound riff.
Yeah.
They were doing a lot with sound effects and music this episode.
Quite the comeback yeah. in that competition. Yeah. We are also gonna get to the immunity challenge where Jeff says history is not an indicator of what will happen. It's an indicator. I don't remember exactly what I actually did clip it, but then I was like, nah, it's too much. Too many clips. And he said, the monster might have a bigger appetite.
What is this Jeff Probst talking to future players in a season to be like, now don't think you can game this twist because we might change it next time. Like, save that for the reunion show.
No.
Why are we talking about that mid-season?
I love it. Jeff Probst, talk to me. It's great.
I'm not saying Jeff Probst can't talk to me. I'm saying Jeff Probst doesn't need to talk to me personally.
No, he does. He needs to talk to all of us. I love it. I love his enthusiasm. I love the setups. I love the idea that like he's whispering to his imaginary friend as the tribe comes up and that someday the tribes are just going to be like, Jeff, who are you talking to?
Look, Taryn. This is one of the only things I have. I was planning on spending the whole week thinking about how, you know, when I lie in bed at night and I think about how I want to go on Survivor and what I would do and what outfit I would wear, zip off pants, by the way. And I think about, you know, what would I do in this scenario or that scenario? He's ruining that for me because he's already telling me I don't get to plan for that scenario next season because they're going to change it. That was my whole week gone.
Well, hey, maybe he won't change it. Maybe that will be the trick, is that it's the same.
Oh, he's reverse psychologying me?
Exactly.
Well, don't do that. That's just mean.
And I love the setup of, all right, so here's what we're going to do. Last time, they got me down to 4. But this time, I'm going to try to get them at 6. But I'm only you know this. I'm willing to go down to 4. I forgot his name. like Daniel before him, Jeff is a terrible negotiator.
I know. He's like, but what they don't know and only you know is I'm going to cave immediately.
Yeah, he's like, all right, so what you can do is if enough of you sit out, then you'll get rice for all of you for 4 days. And they're like, how many people need to sit out? He's like, I don't know. It's a negotiation. Give me an offer. No, that's not how you negotiate, Jeff. You say, I want 9 people to sit out. And they go, what? That's way too many, Jeff. And you're like, what am I going to do? And then you let them try to come up with a counter offer. Come on, Jeff. What about 7? What about 6? That's how you get them.
Because instead, you said, or Jeff says, throw out your best offer. They say 2. And now Jeff's like, oh, man, they're never going to go for 6 with my 2.
Exactly.
So it's like, no. You start. Don't let them start.
You gave away all your leverage by saying it was a negotiation in the first place.
If you come to them, I want 5 cookies. She says, oh, can't have 5 cookies. But fine. I want 4 cookies. All of a sudden, 3 cookies is sounding really reasonable.
But if instead,
you know, she had said you can have 1 cookie, you're like, maybe I can try to get her up to 2, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he lets them start with 2, and then he's like, what? Guys, 2? Come on. That's not an offer. They're like, you told us to start with our best offer. He's like, okay, then fine. 9. And they're like, Jeff, that's ridiculous. He's like, okay, fine. Here's why 6 makes sense. Like, that's what you were trying to land on. And you've just immediately declined 9 and gone to 6. Okay, Jeff. All right. Here's the thing about Jeff.
I'm not a brain surgeon. I don't know calculus.
I'm pretty sure that was Jeff that said that.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff needs to go to the Angelina School of Negotiation. The Survivor is full of bad negotiators. And it's surprising. Yeah. Because you think they'd know by now. Season 42. But no. But at least these Survivor contestants were like, you know, I mean, they did fall into the trap of going to 4.
Look,
maybe they should have pushed 3 harder.
Maybe. But if this had been Boston Rob, this would have gone entirely differently. Boston Rob would have been like, if you all agree on 1 winner, if 10 of you sit out, I'll give you this rice. Like, oh, come on. It's like, nah. Like, come on. What about 6? No, I'll give you maybe 9. Maybe 2 people can compete. Like, ah, oh, come on, Boston Rob. Like, nah. Like, okay, what about 8? Can you give us 8? All right, I'll give you 8. And then Boston Rob afterward would return to the cameras and be like, little do they know, I would have gone to 2.
Exactly. Now, since you've set me
they
up.
They should have asked.
Since you've brought up Boston Rob, I feel like it's time for me to take a little segue here. I apologize, but it's the Stockwatch, so this is what we're doing. I was in the great city of Boston this weekend, and as I do every time I'm in Boston. To be clear, I know that Boston Rob does not currently live in Boston, but every time I'm there, I start going, I need to look it up, because what if he's in Boston? So I start going on the Twitter, on the Instagram, like, he could be in Boston. I'm here now that, you know, this would be the place to see him, not where he lives, but where he's named after. And he was not in Boston as far as I'm aware. Although I did find a tweet from a month ago talking about how in a month he might be in Boston. So that was as close as I was going to get. Kept my eyes out. Didn't see him. Did see Ethan Zahn, though. So
really?
Yeah. Also,
just randomly in Boston,
he was running the Boston Marathon. So,
I mean, I lived there for like 10 years. Never once saw Ethan Zahn. You were there for like a weekend. You saw Ethan Zahn. Come on.
Yeah. Saw Ethan Zahn. And there was a commercial on TV about how Ethan Zahn was in Boston. And they did show Boston Rob in that commercial. So close. Mm. Right.
Oh, well,
yeah.
The things you learn on the Survivor Stockwatch.
Yeah.
We also got a couple of other fun things from the episode. Omer talking about options.
Right now, my game is simply about creating options, as many options moving forward as possible. And I'm not closing any doors right now.
All right, Omer Spradlin.
Yeah, this is great. This is a great Omer segment. Omar knows the rule. Be in the alliance. Also be in all the other alliances as well.
Easy.
Easy.
Other people don't seem to understand that rule. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you're in an alliance. There's people not in that alliance. So go be in an alliance with them as well.
I love this. I think this is great. For some reason, it feels like the edit is setting him up for a fall, but I like it strategically.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I'm looking at this going, okay, how is this going to turn against Omar at some point?
Yeah. We also got from the immunity sit out, Marianne had an interesting strategy. She chose to sit out and then had an impassioned plea to get that fourth person sit out. And this is what she had to say about it.
I'm tearing up, I'm getting sad, and I'm really trying to ramp it up, making people feel bad about trying to vote me out. And hopefully, I'll be able to see another day. People say you can't play this game with emotion, but look at me, using emotions as a weapon.
Look at her.
I like this too. I think there's a very delicate line between using emotions that can save you from a vote. You got to also find a way to use those same emotions or make sure that those same emotions don't prevent you from winning the game. And therein lies the problem. So keep working on that, Marianne. We'll circle back to you in a couple of weeks.
Yes. Well, so the thing here is that I always say, you know, gratitude will get you nowhere in a game like Survivor or Big Brother.
Yes,
I don't think that they would have voted Marianne out had she not done this. I don't know that this actually buys her anything. But what I do like is that, you know, she's working every angle she has. She's not in a great spot right now. And the fact that she is like, hey, I know my position in the game. I know how people see me. I know who I am and the emotions that I have. And I'm going to try and milk every little tiny bit of equity out of it as possible. I love that from Marianne. And I think it speaks to her capability, her potential as a player, if she's given more of a chance here. I love hearing this. I don't know that it made a difference in this particular vote cycle. I don't know that, like, I don't think anybody's going to be like, well, Marianne has an idol. We could blindside her and take out the idol and get out a threat. Or we could be like, but she did sit out of the immunity to give us rice.
I don't think gratitude gets you anywhere. I think guilt can help in the short term. Long-term guilt is bad because people just want to get rid of someone who they feel bad about having done something wrong to. But it's interesting comparing, they're not the same player, but comparing Lydia and Marianne, who are in somewhat like potential similar situations where they both could sort of have played up the, like, I'm the younger sibling vibe. And I like that I'm at least seeing Marianne very self-aware and very like trying to actively do something. Even if what she does doesn't have any effect here, I think it does have at least a slight effect on someone like Jonathan, who isn't going to be willing to give up their spot in immunity and will probably be extremely grateful for the food. But it's not something that you can work on like a great scale with everyone. Like if the votes were already going toward Marianne, yes, this isn't going to take them away.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like it can move the needle if the needle is not pointing at you.
Right.
Like if the needle is pointing at like a few other people and maybe could go in your direction, it could help maybe prevent it from going in your direction a little bit. And this ultimately is, or at least it's portrayed to be, an emotional vote, not a strategic one, an emotionally driven vote between the various options. And so the fact that Marianne is very definitively winning on the emotional battlefront for this vote is definitely a good thing. So I like
it. And the self-awareness is there, which I like.
Yes, absolutely. But the real driver of this vote is going to be seemingly Mike, who is not a fan of Chanel.
Well, I come from, she's a snake.
But not anywhere else, just where he comes from.
Right.
If she goes to where, for example, if Chanel were to show up at Mike's house and walk through the door, she would turn into a snake.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike is like, Chanel is what I call a snake. And everyone else is like, that's what everyone calls a snake. That kind of relationship is what everyone.
Well, look, as Mike very clearly said,
I'm not a brain surgeon. I don't know calculus. I don't, but I'm street smart.
All the snakes on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where else could snakes be but on a street?
Right. Right.
Mike can't fly.
Just Mike Street.
Except for that one flying snake. Pretty sure that exists, right?
Balboa?
I don't know.
Okay. Flying snake. All right.
Yeah, so, I'm pretty sure there's a flying snake.
I don't want to talk about flying snakes. We've already had so much gross stuff in this podcast.
For example, what if you find a hole and a flying snake comes out of it?
And I'm like, what's in this hole?
It's a flying snake!
Oh. I don't think that would be the noise.
You don't know that. Have you seen a flying snake before? You don't know what noise they make.
That would be the noise that Marianne made when jumping off the platform.
I didn't get that.
Oh, come on, Taryn.
I mean, I've got a lot of Marianne doing weird things.
That's the noise of the flying snake.
that's pretty much what we've got from the episode. Anything else that you had from the episode?
No, just strategy that we'll talk about in the ratings.
All right, let's get to the ratings. This is the part where we rate the players from 1 to 10 based on how well we think they're doing in the game from what's shown to us in the Survivor edit. 1 being the worst, 10 being the best, and we will go from worst to best in order. And so I think this week we must start with Chanel. Voted out, not great. The merge, not kind to my draft picks, Lydia and Chanel back to back. Sad to see Chanel go. I would have loved to see her brand of chaos, more in this game, but it felt like, she was never really going to get that opportunity again, that she had the one go and, they were like, no, not again.
Yeah. It seems like Chanel's brand of chaos just wasn't able to find a direction to point itself in post-merge, and so she was left with basically two options, which were try a different brand of chaos, try to just run around, do a lot of things, you know, or sit down, you know, play easygoing, kind of just not try to stick my neck out there. And normally that can help. It works better in Big Brother, but that can be a thing that works in Survivor when there are multiple options. And I think the real question here is, how much was Chanel's name ever truly off the table? And how many people were behind that? Because the edit makes it seem like it was going in that direction for a while and then just moved back based on the people who were running the vote.
Yeah, it seemed like Omer kind of like threw some seeds out there that High latched onto. Then High tried to flip the vote. Seems like he succeeded until it got to Mike. Mike was like, no.
Where I come from, she's a snake.
So Mike talked to Rox and kind of used Rox as the pushback because Rox didn't seem to be on board. Like I'm deeply inferring here, but it seemed like Mike went to Rox, was like, so yeah, it seems like they're trying to flip the vote, which is so dumb, right? And Rox was like, yeah, that's terrible. And he was like, oh, man, well, they're trying to do it. Hopefully, like, we're not going to do it, though, right, Rox? And Rox was like, I don't think so. Why would we want to do that? And he's like, exactly. And then he went back to High and he was like, look, Rox is going to be so pissed if we do this. We don't want to lose Rox just for Chanel. Come on. We gotta keep on board with this, which I think is, you know, as long as he doesn't get caught doing it, great. I think using another person is a great way to do it. It's exactly what Omer did with High. High took the bait and then ran with it. So, interesting sort of battle going on there. But ultimately it's you gotta kind of chalk this down to Chanel made some mistakes in the pre-merge, between the initial losing the vote, still trying to go for it, failing, then the unnecessary vote on Mike to try and block the shot in the dark play and all of that. It was pretty fancy. I can appreciate the kind of cleverness that went into the thought behind it, but socially the ramifications were not great and she was not able to smooth things over to do that damage control. And it led to a grudge, which led to her being voted out here. So, not great from Chanel. And I think overall I have to give her a 2. I'm not going to go all the way down to a 1. I think she actually played it decently here. Once it's like between her and, you know, Romeo, In the, like, by staying calm and being even keeled, she nearly got that vote off of herself. But due to, again, her past mistakes, they were not able to completely go off of her.
I also gave her a 2. I think a 1 results from actively bad play. I think Chanel was not in this episode actively playing bad, but I can't give her any higher because I don't think she was actively doing anything to try and save herself either. Mm-hmm. I think there were a couple votes for her, namely Tori. Tori's the main one, but you could probably potentially get someone else that I feel like if Chanel had spent a little bit of more time working with some of the other people who are outside of the bigger alliance, trying to pitch why they might want to keep her around, might have been a more viable chance of staying.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So next up, I think I've got to go Romeo. Quite the fall from grace for Romeo. It's not a great episode for Romeo. He lost. We were wondering why Drea did not include him in this majority alliance. She ends up telling us in this episode. She feels like Romeo changed once they hit the merge. He got paranoid. He got weird. And she didn't want to include him anymore. And he is floundering here. Very nearly gets the vote put on him via his quote unquote paranoia. It's pretty justified in my eyes.
Yeah. Like,
I'm not blaming him a ton from what I'm seeing, but obviously something has gone very wrong socially for Romeo that everybody is so, like, just exhausted with him seemingly. So I've got to rate him low here because it was not a good episode, and I'd give him a 3.
I give him a 3. The only thing that matters in Survivor when it comes to your... what you're doing is what other people perceive you doing. So people, whether or not he was paranoid or because I think paranoia most of the time, sort of when you hear that word, you think unjustified, right? You think someone is acting a certain way, acting like they're, you know, stressed out, caught up in their thoughts over a situation and they shouldn't be. And it's a negative connotation. Romeo heard his name out there. Now, his name was at that time the backup plan, but still, you don't want your name. You don't
That's
want your name
still
being out
bad.
There.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
You don't want your name out there, especially with all these advantages and everything.
Also, yeah, especially if you haven't been warned. Like, it's right. Not like they were like, hey, you're the backup plan, but don't worry. It's right. Like, I'm hearing my name.
So
nobody's
that,
told me about that.
And it seems like, I feel like we're missing something because
we must be.
It seemed like that combined with he gets more paranoid when he says, I feel like my allies from the pre-merge are not even looking me in the eye, not talking to me, not telling me anything about this. What happened in between last episode and this episode in the span of shortened season, a day or so, that made everyone start distrusting Romeo or not wanting to include him? He says that he felt like he was left out of the vote last time. And I know there were some complicated vote scenarios there with where that vote ended up, but it seems like some people were able to re-ingratiate themselves with the big group, and Romeo for whatever reason wasn't able to, and so justified feeling on the outs. I think that it's like it takes a very particular type of player to read the room or the island and say, even though I'm justified, right, the beach, even though I'm justified, read the beach, even though I'm justified in this suspicion and in this paranoia, I need to somehow know that that's making it worse and calm it down and not try to, you know, hunt out where this came from. Because it seems like the more that he was trying to figure out the answer, the more people were not liking this. And so I don't know if maybe like if you hear your name out there and then you just go, oh, yeah. That's weird. Oh, well. So Chanel, it seems like on the plan. And it takes a very particular type of person to know that that's like what they should do in this scenario, given this group of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, next up for me, I would have Tori. Tori actually had like a pretty good episode because, you know, A, she won her second straight immunity, which is like impressive. 2, I just said A2.
A2.
B, yep. She caught Drea with the knowledge is power advantage, which she could theoretically use to her advantage to help split this group up. That said, she's still in the minority. She was still the target for this episode until she won the immunity. And the group stayed together. They didn't splinter on this vote. So it's kind of like, I almost want to go up to a 4 for Tori, because she did have these good moments. But at the same time, it's just like I still haven't seen any actual significant progress from her to get out of this spot in the minority. She doesn't actually have any advantages to use. She doesn't have anything. And the fact that she's now won back-to-back immunities only kind of further puts a target on her back in my eyes. So I think I still have to go with a 3 for Tori. She's just still in such a bad spot.
We're at the final 10 now, correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
At the final 10, Tori's not going to be able to win her way to the end with purely immunities. Just
she needs I would guess she needs at least 2 more rounds before the majority starts to break up. More likely 3, given the fact that she'll probably have a huge target on her back by then.
We saw one scene of Tori talking with Marianne and cluing Marianne into the paint that she saw on Drea's hand. And that was good.
Mm-hmm.
If we saw more of that, that would probably be better. Although, double-edged sword, because then people are going to be like, why is Tori spreading stuff around? Like, Tori's name still being the talked up as being an easy boot. If she hadn't won immunity, probably would have been her name out there with Romeo's and Chanel's. So, yeah, I gave her a 4 because I think I'm seeing at least some improvement. Mostly I gave her a 4 because this episode didn't highlight her not so great social game.
I think that's fair. I really considered the 4, but it's fair.
It's good to win the back-to-back immunities, but I don't think, as we've seen from some recent seasons, I don't think that just winning challenges or just finding idols gets you anything unless you're then using that safety to do something else and to enhance your game.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So next up, this was actually difficult for me, but I think I do have to still have Marianne here toward the bottom. Now, it's not terrible. I actually am not nearly as low on Marianne as some of the other people on the bottom for a couple of reasons. One, she has an idol. I think that's great. Unfortunately, with Drea having this knowledge is power advantage and the ability to steal an idol, she might end up losing the idol, which puts her in a precarious position. But she's still protected by the people that are kind of running the show right now, which is, the old Taku tribe. Jonathan, Omer, Lindsay are all in the majority, and they are still nowhere near losing their piece on the board. Plus, she has an idol and an extra vote. She's valuable to them. They want to keep her around. And for that reason, I think she will be the person that they target last of the people on the bottom. Now, there's only Romeo and Tori left ahead of her. But that's the 2 rounds that somebody like Marianne would need, not to mention the fact that, again, she has that idol potentially. I think that they will underestimate Marianne. And Marianne, like, unlike Romeo and Tori, who are both very obviously gamers. Like, you look at them, you see what they're doing, they're running around, they're gamers. Marianne, I think, can be the kind of player, the kind of person on the outs that when it comes down to it, the majority is going to start to be like, we need to start looking at each other. We need to start looking at setting ourselves up. And is it worth taking one last shot at Marianne? Or are we going to take the shot early here? Especially since Marianne might play an idol. We don't have the numbers to split the votes in the right way that we want. Like, I feel like Marianne still has legs in this game. I also like what she did with the immunity challenge. So I'm going to give Marianne a 5. But she is still kind of on the lower end of the spectrum right now because she is still in the minority. But I do think she's got some legs here.
I like everything you said. I think all my votes are going to skew slightly higher. I actually gave Marianne a 6 for all the same reasons that you said. I think that the seeing Marianne have some self-awareness with how she comes off, knowing that she's going to try and play an emotional card every once in a while or use that to her benefit. I really liked seeing that. I think that there's a world where I can see sort of like Marianne, I'm giving her a benefit because of some of the potential moves I see other people making. I can see if we have like a sort of, I don't want to say underdog, but like the people who are not in the main alliance, if that starts forming into a group of any kind, Marianne's one of the people who someone's going to want to scoop up. I think that Marianne is more, even more protected by the former Orange Tribe than any of the other people who are in on the outs. I think the only place I really worry for Marianne, and I know going into this season, a lot of people thought this would be her strong suit, I worry for Marianne in a final tribal council scenario. I think there's a lot Marianne needs to do to make herself seem like a, I think she's a rootable character. And I think that there's a chance people could get to the end and want to give it to her. But I think that she needs to be able to argue like what she did for herself. So if she has like a great idol play or something that really that keeps her here, that's going to be great. If she can get into an alliance that's doing something, I just think that so far she hasn't been able to be like on the right side of any kind of strategic move that she helped form.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, unless we see, you know, I think that she's definitely the kind of player that could like benefit from a bitter jury, obviously. Because she's just so likable. But I also think that like she has this, I mean, there's a spark to, there's a charisma to Marianne that is just undeniable. And I think that that charisma will work well for her. You know, in a way that it works against some players, like we're watching a Big Brother season right now where there's kind of like a nerdy player who like, anytime the nerdy player does something that isn't what the majority wants, it's like, screw them. They're supposed to be under us. Marianne just has that just like utter likability. That's like, you can't really be that mad at Marianne. And I think that if she were to get to the end, I don't think it would take much. I think it would take maybe a couple of key moves. I think she can explain herself really well. I think the explanation we got from just this one little like immunity thing is so well thought out. I think she could crush a final tribal. So I think that she's definitely somebody to watch out if she gets there. I think the biggest problem is getting there. But I don't think it's impossible. Yeah. I don't think we should count her out.
I don't think we should count her out. So I'm sticking with my six. I feel decent. You know, I got it. It's been a really long time since we've had anyone whose name is even close to Mary on the show who got past second boot. So
there you go.
Congrats.
There you go. All right. Next up, and this one is actually, it surprised me that it is this way, but I actually have high next. Not very high in the ranking. I just feel like this is such a fall from grace, you know? High obviously is a very capable player. He crushed it in the pre-merge, in a spot where, you know, he was on the bottom. He managed to flip things to get himself on the top. But I think what I'm seeing here in the merge is that he's not really on top again. Like, the fact is he was on the bottom in the pre-merge, and it seems like while he's in the majority, it seems like he does not have a lot of sway in the majority, considering the fact that for two votes in a row, he has had his own agenda and he has failed to enact that agenda twice. He is not having the sway in this majority to tell me that he is well positioned within it. At the end of the day, the people who are calling the shots are whoever they are, they're certainly not high. And we obviously saw Omer technically fail to flip this vote as well, but Omer kind of just like threw it out there and let high run with the ball. I don't think Omer really cared one way or another all that much. And at the end of the day here, high has now lost two people from his tribe, to kick off this merge. Even though we couldn't trust Chanel, she was still at least connected to him in some way, Whereas somebody like Marianne is not. Somebody like Romeo, not. I mean, they had a great conversation, but he doesn't seem very connected to Romeo in any way. Romeo is kind of more on the Drea Rocks side of things. And obviously Marianne is more attached to Taku. When Omer is talking about options, Hai is losing all of his and he's failing to influence these votes. So that's not speaking very well to his path in the game for me. So for right now, I'm dropping him down to a 6. I feel like, I actually don't remember what I gave him last time. Obviously losing Lydia was huge, hugely bad for him. So it might've been low, last week as well, but, he has not been able to rise from that yet. I still think he's a very capable player. I think he's got the potential to come back up, but man, it is, it's rough going so far for Hai.
I think Hai is locked in with the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Hai has some great ideas, is clearly interested enough in enacting those ideas that he will attempt to have them, you know, happen, throwing them out there. But he's, for some reason, unable to, like, when he sees with the Lydia vote last time and then with this time, hopefully comes out of this and realizes, even though he's been voting on the right side, he's not getting what he wants to happen with this group of people. So he needs to find a group of people who will agree to that. And so if he can do that, I can see that he has the ability to come up with plans and speak about them. But I think his real problem here is the targeting Romeo wasn't like a horrible idea. It wasn't, you know, it was just that the people that he was trying to pitch it to were so set on Chanel, which is also tricky because some of the people who wanted Chanel out are people who also probably shouldn't have wanted Chanel out. So like, it's kind of even more frustrated there. But I've seen good things from Hai, also saw good things from Romeo pre-merge. So, you know, people, they need to readjust. If he can readjust quickly, I can see a good scenario. I also had him at a 6. I originally, when I was watching the beginning of the episode, had him at a 7 and then dropped it down once we got to the vote. But we'll see. You know, he's got a lot of points when he says that Chanel is a person they could have come back to. Just wasn't able to influence the right people, unfortunately.
Yes. All right. Well, next I have Rox and Drea, the both of them. And I'm kind of been back and forth about where I would place them in order. I've kind of landed on Drea just ahead of Rox, mostly just because she has this like fourth advantage, which is great. She kind of got caught with it a little bit, but I don't think that will matter too much. Shouldn't matter too much. But I'm going to give her the edge just because of that. Even though I think Rox potentially made less of a mistake, I just feel like, what are they doing throwing away Romeo for no reason? Again, we might be missing something, but that's like, again, in an episode where Omer is telling us, I want options, I'm aligning myself with every outcast, we're seeing Drea and seemingly Rox just throw Romeo away for no conceivable reason. Romeo says to Drea, like, I feel like you won't speak to me. You won't look at me. Like why? This is a number for you.
Yeah, not only, like, they got saved here by the fact that Romeo didn't go, but something about, and you know, could be wrong, but from what we've seen so far, the way that Rox, Roy, and Drea have both communicated with people that they've decided they don't want to work with anymore, like Tori, for example, it doesn't seem like they're the kind of people who next episode might go, you know what, maybe we were wrong. Let's loop Romeo back in. Because I think if they tried to do that, Romeo would be like, yes, please. Like, I'll forgive you. Let's go back to, you know, I'm glad that we're a unit again. It seems like they're both not concentrating on trying to keep their numbers around, have the power position in this group. You know, at the tribal, they talk a lot about like where you want to be in a car, passenger versus driver versus hanging out the roof. You know, do you want to kick in the front seat or sit in the back seat? Which seat should I take? I may have listened to Rob's really old Friday song podcast yesterday. That's only 10 years old. It's fine. So I just think that they're like not thinking about steering the boat. Like they're just for whatever going with like what feels right in this moment. And maybe we missed something huge. Like maybe Romeo did something really horrible, but I had Roxroy at a 6. I think Roxroy kind of fell back in the conversation this episode, which considering that he had been looked at kind of negatively in the last couple episodes by certain people was a step up from that. And then Drea I had at a 7 just purely because of the advantages, but I still feel like Drea is like missing a tiny sprinkle of like finesse when it comes to how she's like, even just like with the Tori calling her out about the paint, like just like that. She had a quick answer, but there was a little bit left to be desired about like with the stiffness or something.
Yeah. I agree. I had them both at 6s for me. I'm interested to see where they go. I'm rooting for them, especially Roxroy. I hope that we get something. I just don't understand the sort of throwing Romeo away. The next tier for me is Jonathan and Lindsay. And I have them both at 7s, with Lindsay just above Jonathan still, because Jonathan continues to just be this massive target. I think Jonathan is seemingly making more connections, like social bonds and things, but I think Lindsay is theoretically in a better spot. We barely see anything from Lindsay ever, but she seems like she's in a good spot, so I'm going to default her to that. Overall, like, I don't have a ton to say. I don't think this was a huge episode to like really push the needle anywhere for either of them as players. But I think they're in a great spot right now in the majority, and it's going to be tough. Like, there's going to have to be a revolt to take them down. And so they're kind of in the driver's seat right now.
And they're two of the only people in the game who seem to be really working to not lose any of their potential pieces.
Yes.
So that's a step up from everyone else. I also had Lindsay ahead a little bit. I had Lindsay actually at an 8 just because I felt like we can't trust the Survivor hidden edit right now. And that I could see, I think Jonathan's such a big threat, obviously is going to probably go out before Lindsay. Then again, Lindsay could get hit with the, you're the ally of the threat person and we need to weaken the threat person as well. For me, it was the conversation she said about wanting to, this is so cheesy, but like at the tribal council saying that you need to recognize that throughout the game, you might want to be in different positions of the car. If she's saying that now, that gives me reason to think that in a final tribal council scenario, if someone calls her out on not having having stepped back and ridden coattails or something, or whatever the case may be, that I feel like she could be able to speak to what she actually did there.
Yeah. All right. Well, that leaves Mike and Omer, who were, I believe, were my top two last week as well. I'm going to give Mike the 8 again. I think that he had another great segment in this episode about bonding, particularly with Omer, which is fantastic, because Omer is the other kind of top contender here right now. I think he also proved that he is capable of directing a vote. He won the battle with Hai to direct this vote onto Chanel. I liked his tactic of using Roxroy as the sort of like the pusher rather than himself. And he just continues to do very well here. I think the 8 is warranted given the win. Was Chanel the best person for him to take out here? You know, I personally would have preferred to see him take out somebody like Romeo. Again, like Chanel, at least she's connected to you in some way. But at the end of the day, he proved the amount of influence he has. He continues to make great social bonds. And so it's an 8 for me.
I also gave him an 8, basically for all the same reasons you said. I think the biggest thing for me is just like, I don't love the complete willingness to give Chanel up, and the, even though it works in Survivor, why are you so hung up on Chanel voting for you on the same night that you voted for her? That's the only thing that bothers me. It's just the, like, there's like this ounce of like non self-awareness of like not understanding the, like, I love to see a player who can think, I don't like what they did, but I know why they did it. And instead, it seems a lot like Mike is just like, I don't like what they did. Time to vote him out. And, you know, so it was just that. I gave him an 8 because of position, but I feel like my heart's more like at a 7.
Yes. All right. Well, that does leave us with Omer, who I did have at the top of the list here. The question for me was, do I give him another 9 or do I drop him to an 8? I loved what he had to say about options. I love that he has connections to all of the outsiders. He's playing up this idea that because he didn't have a vote, he's not actually with the majority, and that gives him an in with some of the people in the minority. I actually don't love that so much because he's playing a role now, and it's a role that could be exposed. And if that role gets exposed, then like, things could start to crumble. I don't love that. I don't love sort of building a house of cards, so to speak. I'd rather he work from a foundation that's a little more solid. Be a little more upfront with your actual position with some of these players, so that there's nothing to expose that, hey, like I'm your best hope of whatever, right? But we're seeing so little of what actually is happening here with his game. I don't know what his long-term plans are. I don't know how he's trying to set himself up. And overall, like we saw that he tried to get the vote onto Romeo. It seems to have failed. He didn't have as much investment in it as High did. And I loved how he set High up to push it for him. And so the fact that it failed, there's no blowback on him whatsoever. I think that's all great. But I just don't know what he's doing right now. I don't know what his plans are. So, for me, I like what he said about options. I like the fact that he's the most connected person. I'm gonna give him the 9.
Taryn's like, here's a whole list of reasons, but you know what? Options.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of it is that I gave him a 9 last week, and I think he was more impressive last week. But last week was the rise. He is still in that position and it seems to have even gotten into a better position, getting that connection with the outsiders. There are some flaws I see in it, that could make him worthy of an 8. But I think until I see the downfall, I'm going to keep him at the 9 for now. I don't want to be influenced by the edit, 'cause I do feel like the edit was just a little too weird.
It's hard because I was thinking about the edit too. It's like, a lot of times we've seen this exact same basically talk about options in a negative edit with someone saying like, I want to make alliances with everyone. And then they go around making alliances with everyone. And then you hear everyone say, oh my gosh, they're telling everyone the same thing. Let's get them out. So you have to read into the edit a little bit when you see that we're not getting that narrative. And instead we're getting the narrative of, wow, Omar's doing so great making all these alliances. Why is no one else thinking about this? So there was a lot I really liked. I did go with the 8. Because I'm not clear on what the reason behind why he ended up voting for Romeo was. Did he vote for Romeo thinking that votes were going to go that way? Or did he vote for in which case is why I'm leaning towards the 8. But if he voted for Romeo knowing that the votes were going to go to Chanel and just wanted to stay over there for some reason to maintain.
Well, I think they had intentionally split the votes a little bit. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I guess it's just interesting to see someone. He's playing just slightly. I don't know. I go back and forth because it's like I like what he did with High, setting High up to take the fall if this doesn't work, which is what happened. But if it had succeeded, it's going to be hard to then claim this as your move. And so it's a tricky line and it's early in the game. So it's not super necessary.
I think it's fine at final 11 to be that wasn't
fine
my move
here, but it's more like, is this Omer's plan for the rest of the game to stay in the back? Probably not. You know, I don't want to, an 8's high. I just want to see a little bit more confidence because part of me, it's the edit. It worries me to see such a positive edit of someone this early.
Feels like a trap.
It does. It feels like a trap. I would love for Survivor. You know, I'm not sure how much they've done this. Like, I want the back-to-back episode edit of, like, look how great this person is. No hints at all that anything's going wrong. Next episode, same person. Look how bad this is. I don't know if they've done that exactly, and I would love that.
I feel like Shan got a little bit of that last season.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
But that's it. That's the Stock Watch for the week.
Woo.
I hope you all enjoyed the PB&J.
Yeah, I don't like peanut butter and jelly.
What?
What?
Come on.
Taryn, you can be the jelly. I'll be the peanut butter.
Okay. I'm real jelly. Real jelly of your PB.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you all so much for joining us here tonight. What a night of reality television. I'll be back next week, of course, with another Survivor Stock Watch podcast, talking through episode 7, aka episode 9 of Survivor season 42. And find me over on Twitter at Armstrong Taryn. Check out the Taryn Show. I talked with Gabby this week for the Taryn Show, and next week, Survivor New Zealand contestant, Lisa will be on the Taryn. Ooh. So just make sure you check out my conversation with Lisa. She's great to talk to. So make sure you listen to that one. It will be the final Taryn Show of this block of Taryn shows. So taking a little bit of a hiatus after that. And that's about what I've got. Find me over on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. Watching these episodes live with all of you. It's a lot of fun. So check it out. Mary, what have you got going on?
Follow me everywhere at Frail Mary to see what I've got going. Check out Kowski Cast for my Riverdale podcast. Check out Big Brother coverage over on Rob's podcast. And you know what? I'm not on this, but check out Mess Magnets, the newest of the Rob's podcast shows. You know, talking about hot gossip and spilling of the pop culture tea with Kirsten and Sasha. So check that out. Just do something different.
There you go. All right. Thank you all so much for joining us this week. And I'll see you next time.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.